Welcome to the 70th Monkey My Back podcast. Contact us at momcast@gmail.com to leave comments and contributions. Tonight in the pod, we talk around our spinning orders, enjoy some marvellous contributions, take a look at this year's UK comic book convention schedule, and tonight it's Jane's turn in the spotlight and she discusses a history of violence. Mumcast, the comic book podcast that considers Meow Mix an ideal alternative to lunch.
Did you get confused at that point because you're referring to yourself in the third person?
No, it's because of James' lack of
punctuation.
Another comma and not an and to signify the end of his.
You can either have inspiration or well-written English. You can't have both.
70 of those I've written, right? I tell you, the week you turn up with one of those, right? I tell you, you can criticise every single one of mine.
Jane, approximately
50 I've
rewritten.
I didn't criticise or draw attention to it.
No, thank God you didn't bring attention to it on the podcast.
That would have been
mortifying.
Did I?
By slipping up over it.
No, I did.
I slipped up over it, but then I didn't go, oh, James, you're terrible writing. I just
stopped flapping.
No, that was me. I did that.
I need that for authority.
Recoup like Mr. T.
Yeah,
so it's like a verbal breakdance and you were saying there. That's cool. That's what you went podcast then, isn't it?
Podcast.
Yeah.
He's doing some singing. We've been doing a lot of singing, haven't we?
Yeah.
Some of us have.
So much for an early start. We get the comics a whole day earlier and yet we're still recording the podcast exactly the same time.
So are we working it on a sort of three contributions and then on your fourth you get a theme song now, don't
I think
you?
That's what we're doing. Yeah. So we've got at least one person who is almost due.
He's almost due a theme tune. Uh-huh.
Who's here, aside from the people who've sent stuff in? We're giving them an awful lot of play. We haven't introduced ourselves.
Hi, I'm James.
Hi, I'm Jane.
And I'm Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hiya. Hi, guys.
Hello.
And this week we are recording from Southampton Dog Pound.
Yeah.
Which is why you can hear the dogs, but you might be able to hear the dogs barking in the background. I promise that's the only time I'm going to mention it. They are not mistreated. We feed them at least twice a week.
Yeah.
They get at least one walk a month.
Sometimes you kill the creature before you put it in there for them to eat as well.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes. But, yeah.
But sometimes if it's still alive, it's kind of it's exercise and food.
And we've got the whole website thing going on with the that's a revenue stream for us.
Oh, for shizzle.
Yeah, for shizzle. The dog pound. Excellent, I see where you're going with that. So what have you guys been up to this week? Wow, it wasn't a trick question.
No, it's just the lots of things have happened. And James is to watch Casino.
We did watch
homemade
Casino.
Lasagna.
That starts with an explosion, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
That's all I know about it, really. Yeah. And it's about casinos.
Oh, well, yeah. Spoilers, the Scarlet Witch did it.
Is it a prequel to Meet the Fockers?
No, it's
no.
not.
Oh. Well, then I'm not interested, because as far as I'm concerned, those are the only Robert De Niro films I want to watch.
It was a very good, very engaging gangster movie.
Ooh.
However, because of its chronological place in the history of gangster movies, I found it a little bit cookie cutter.
Oh, because it's similar to Goodfellas.
In it.
Mm-hmm.
In it. What did you... So that's what both of you did.
Yeah, I was trying to ask this. On Tuesday, a man watched me eat my lunch.
That's a bit weird.
It was a bit weird. Apparently, I eat very differently on my own.
He told you afterwards. He gave you a report afterwards, did he?
No, it was pointed out. It was pointed out to me that I eat different when I don't think anyone's watching.
Jane hands out scorecards for people who are watching her eat.
You should always eat like nobody's watching. Or dance.
Dance.
Or
make love.
No. So that was a bit off-putting.
James and I both. Like, I said masturbate exact same time he said make love, which shows exactly what our attitudes towards our genitals are, I think, in both cases.
Don't you think that, actually are... No, never mind.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a poor little poor little unthorned fort there. I lament it because it died before it ever got to meet the world. I think that's quite sad, really. We should
sad.
Have a minute's silence for that thought.
You're a thought killer. And you're going to go to hell.
I'm a thought abortist.
Thought killers.
What I am.
Yeah, I know. And, yeah. And everyone knows that a thought is, even when it's just a malformed little notion, is still a viable life form. I got given one of the things that happened this week is I got given, I don't know why I'm showing you this, James, you gave me it, a drawing of a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
A Spider-Man. Did John Romita Jr. do this?
John Romita Jr. did do that. He found that one. Hey, James, you guys are funny guys. I'm going to deliver on that Spider-Man I promised you.
Spider-Man.
May I ask a question about the Spider-Man, please?
Yes, you may ask a question about
Spider-Man.
What's with
the weird line in his stomach?
That's to accentuate his belly, John Romita Jr. told me.
Yeah, he's got a bit of belly.
He uses a lot of lines, John Romita Jr.
Yeah, lines, so, and some of them go in one direction and others go in a different direction.
What is that?
That's his belly button.
Okay.
And it looks more like a full stop, but it is a belly button.
Yeah, it's very small.
And his head's...
a strawberry.
Looks a bit like strawberry. That's a birthmark we don't like to mention.
And, oh, okay, yeah, that's him speaking.
I like his little tufts of hair sticking out the top of his head.
I thought that was like a leg that never made it.
Well, that's to denote there's a.
Yeah, that's
speech.
What I realised.
Do we have a.
You should read comics, you'd understand how that works.
Really?
Do we have Mr. Romita Jr.'s permission to scan this and
Yeah, please. He said, you guys can scan this in, you can put it on your blog.
On your blog.
Yeah. Ho, ho, ho.
I got that delivered. Thank you for that, James. That only just happened.
That's okay.
I presented an awards ceremony and the jokes I came up with didn't really go over very well. Because apparently they'd all heard the one about the chicken and the road. And you can't say things about other races anymore, I've discovered.
Right.
So I don't think I'm going to get invited back.
That's not true. I heard on Rojo 4 today that being dismissive, being racist about Muslim people... As the person on the radio put it today, passed the dinner party test.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
I'm 35 years old. I've never heard of the dinner party test before.
I think it's... it makes perfect sense, though. You don't need to have it explained to you once you hear about it, do you?
I hate it already.
It's the sort of thing you can say at a dinner party, and people are so hypocritical that they will laugh. That's awful.
It was incredible, though, because I was having a bath at the time, and it actually made me punch the side of my bath. It's irritated me so much.
That's ridiculous. Did you break the bath?
It's passed the dinner... Not because I hit it. It passed the dinner party test.
The middle classes, I hate them.
Well, I hope our podcast... Passes the dinner party test.
Yes, so do I. Actually, no, I don't.
Yeah. This podcast is shit. Now pass me the chips.
Do they have chips at dinner parties, or do they have
dinner parties?
French fries.
Dinner parties ran my way when I was growing up. We all had chips for...
I think it... I get confused, because sometimes when you ask for chips in places now, you get French fries, and that doesn't seem right. Or freedom fries.
Is it still a dinner party if it's just tea with your mum and dad at the end of the day? That's the same thing, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Everyone's invited.
Yeah.
Not attending is frowned upon. Yeah, I think so.
So tea at the end of your day with mum and dad watching Nationwide.
And sharing anecdotes.
Yeah.
There's entertainment and anecdotes.
Yeah. Going, that Frank Boff, he's showing his age, isn't he?
And afterwards the men retire to the smoking room, which is also the living room.
Yeah.
And the ladies go to the kitchen. That's how it should be.
That's right. No.
Yeah.
What if that would pass the dinner party
like
test?
What, probably.
It
depends on the dinner party.
That's true.
I'm getting more and more confused the more
Hang
we talk about it, about what the dinner party test
actually
means.
So there's different types of... There must be different groups of people, so there'd be different dinner party tests. So that doesn't pass my dinner party test.
I suspect that the person on Radio 4 is possibly upper middle class, at the very least... They're all kind of the same as each other.
So do you think they
you
went...
You can say what you like about them, and they're not a race.
They went to one dinner party, someone made a slightly off joke about Muslim people, everyone laughed, and then they thought, well, that'd do for the news tomorrow.
Yeah.
I've got nothing else to talk about. I'm having that.
I can't... We'd never fill for time like that, would we?
No, never.
It's David Wynn! He's very cross!
Hello, Mumcast. I just recorded a long, old, pissy, negative, nasty, angry rant. And when I got to the end, realised I hadn't actually been recording. So let me start again. Right, this is David Wynne, author of Particle Fiction. And I'm in a bad mood with comics fans. Let me just say this. Stop judging films before they come out. Just stop. Stop. It's perfectly natural when bits of information about something become known and leak out to draw some conclusions about that and start making choices about what you're going to want to go and see and what you're not going to want to go and see. But you know what? You're making the choices based on the wrong fucking things. You bunch of twats. Like, oh, so the X-Men First Class, oh, their costumes are too close to the originals. Oh no, it must be awful. Never mind that it's directed by Matthew Vaughan and written by Jane Goldman and starring Matthew Fassbender and James McAvoy, both all of whom are awesome and talented and have produced some of the fantastic films. Oh no, that's not important. No, the colour of their costumes, that's what's important, and that's what will make it a good or a bad film. Shut up. And while you're at it, there you are picking fucking holes in the Captain America film because his costume isn't close enough to the original. Oh right. So it's okay for one but not the other. Make your fucking minds up. Oh no, Thor's got a black man in it playing a Norse god. Oh, and it looks a bit camp and silly. Camp and silly, yeah, because heaven forbid an adaptation of a Jack Kirby comic might be a bit camp and silly. No! Something else, yeah? All levels of comics creativity. Stop with the stupid infighting, backbiting and bollocks. Like, best example, Jason Aaron is my favourite comic book writer working today, just as a writer. I think he's amazingly talented man, but good God, his reading comprehension doesn't seem to be very good at all, does it? Alan Moore, in an interview last year, makes a really clearly facetious, tongue-in-cheek comment in the midst of making another point, quite clearly meant to illustrate the point that DC and Marvel's attitude to their creators is a bit stupid, in that if they respected their creative people, they would be asking them to do new things instead of constantly resuscitating old concepts. And he illustrates this by saying that when they told him they were going to have their top flight creators working on a rehash of his work from 30 years ago, that, well, they obviously don't have any top flight creators, middle flight, or even lower flight. He knows that they have great creators. Of course Alan Moore knows that the mainstream comics industry has great people working in it, because he's worked with them himself. But if you look at America's Best Comics line, he works with J.H. Williams and Chris Sprouse, most obviously, both of whom work in mainstream comics. He obviously thinks they're all right, doesn't he? If he was happy to have them draw his stuff. Oh, he also let Geoff Johns write Tom Strong and Ed Brubaker, so he obviously thinks they're okay too. Oh, Howard Chaykin does a lot of stuff for Marvel at the moment. He doesn't seem to mind him working on Tom Strong. Oh, of course Alan Moore knows there's good creators. Of course he didn't really mean that there were no good creators in modern mainstream comics. That's blatant. But no, it's much easier to just get stupidly angry over one line that was pushed around on the internet too much. Grow up! Grow the fuck up! Use your brain, read, and understand. Yeah, I'm a bit pissed off, I guess. I'm in a bad mood. I'm going back to work tonight. I've got a night shift ahead of me. I never like doing that. I'm a third of the way through the latest issue of Particle Fiction, and I'd much rather stay home and keep working on that, but I can't. By the way, when I say I'm a third of the way through, I'm on page 9, which should, a little bit of maths should tell you, normally that's over halfway through. Yes. Issue 11 of Particle Fiction is going to be a bumper-sized special, and there's going to be lots of special things about it. That's not the only thing. It's my first ever honest-to-goodness superhero comic as well. It's going to be called Hypergirl. So, if you're going to get excited about films and start picking them apart a year in advance, well, fuck it, you've got about a week and a half to get excited about this, so why don't you? But what is wrong with us, with comic book fans, with geekdom? Why do we insist on being so thick. It's not the negativity of it that I have a problem with. It's the stupidity of it. You know, if I am fine with tearing things down if they're crap, but tearing things down that you haven't seen based on stupid details, that I can't get behind, and it just makes me want to slap people. And relax. Well, after all that negativity, I'm sure that the lovely Momcast people will have some positivity to try and swing things back again. And, yeah, I apologise for spewing my hate all over your lovely ear canals. Please, do try and cheer up and, you know, don't let me affect your day. All right. Peace, love, Dolphin Free Tuna.
We should probably talk about comics.
Yes.
Should we? We should. Did we buy comics?
We did. Yay, yesterday. Comic Book Wednesday is becoming quite popular, isn't it?
It's still not old, is it?
No.
It's still a lovely novelty to go and get a comics then.
Yeah, it's nice.
I'm still giddy with it.
You can look like it.
He gets excited on a Wednesday. Like a little kid going to the comic book shop.
And then angry on a Thursday, apparently. Yeah, please don't listen after the music tonight.
Oh, yeah. I picked up part two of the Northlander story that Becky Cloonan and Brian Wood have been working on together, which is actually issue 36.
Mm. Second part of The Girl in the Ice.
Yes, Girl in the Ice. It's stunning. I think I described it on Twitter as beautiful, sad and perfect. It was a really great two-part story. You follow the old man who's trying to take the girl back to the ice because the local army is going to be staying at his house, so he doesn't want her to be discovered.
I remember James has got the giggles over there because he finds ancient Norse tragedies hilarious.
No, it's because I say army. You love
no, it. It's just because I'm thinking. It's amazing that they're all fighting. They seem so angry now, but they're going to be laughing on the other side of their faces when they make several institutions in the UK collapse because of the weakness of their banking infrastructure.
Are we still going on about the Icelandic the thing?
I think that's what I was laughing about.
And they're going to be laughing about that. The thing I like is we were talking about dinner parties and the Ray Winston factor has gone up by degrees, have you noticed? Because normally he talks quite well, but just then he's like, I was just laughing on the, you know, it goes, you know, like. So his comics are going to be great. It's going to be, I read it and there were some words, I didn't really bother with those, I just looked at the pictures, innit?
Nick, you just killed James.
Sorry, James, are you okay?
You're very warm.
It's very warm in here. It's hot.
You're right. Do you want some of...
James has gone bright red, so we'd best move on. So what?
So he goes to take the girl back in the... to put her back into the lake, and some of the local army that he's supposed to be housing have gone by his house. He's not there, so they've gone to find him, and he's trying to get the facade that he's fishing. They discover something else. So I'm just going to leave it there because I really want everyone to pick up just two parts of this story. Yeah. Please pick it up. It's brilliant. It has such a very sad, unjust ending. But the story was brilliant. It's just two issues.
Perfect.
It was perfect. It was a very nice little story. I know you guys have talked about Northlanders before on the podcast, but I haven't really known that much about it. So... I don't know if Becky Cloonan and Brian Wood will be picking this up permanently, maybe.
Probably. Normally he changes up the artist quite a lot in it, but they're always, the stories are always very poignant and very sort of solid.
I think he's had a... No, I've recovered. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that, Jane.
That's okay.
That was horrible. 70 podcasts, and that's the first time I've had an uncontrollable fit of the giggles. That's not bad. I think pretty much they change up artists.
Yeah.
For pretty much every storyline, don't they?
And he writes the stories. The stories are kind of geared towards the particular artist, but they are always very sort of poignant and good. That's good, isn't it? Jane started with that perfect three-word review. Yeah. The best I've come up with. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
I think Brian Wood generally is quite good.
It was a love review. I was yucking my guts out the whole way through it for some reason, and you managed to sum it up by saying it was good. We really are.
Obviously, as everyone knows, I'm a massive fan of Becky Cloonan's art. I just have to say the colouring on it, though, it's gorgeous. It's really delicious.
Who's done that then?
Yeah.
I've not seen it so well coloured.
Dave McCaig. I don't recognise that name, but that doesn't mean he hasn't done books that I've seen before. It is really good, isn't it? He picks out her inks really nicely without overwhelming them.
Exactly. I mean, her art has so much detail in that you don't need... It doesn't need to be over-coloured. And I think the subtle pastel colours give a feel for how cold it is and what the story's trying to say in the panel without overwhelming or shadowing any of the artwork.
The cover as well is really different. I'm just going to try and work out who that was by. Massimo Cannavale, I think, has been cover artist on it for a lot of it, or all of it, possibly. But it's good... It's really nicely painted and beautiful and kind of classical looking.
So, yeah, I enjoyed that. Everyone go and buy this now.
It was lovely. I finished reading it this morning. It's very, very nice.
Did you get anything else, Jane?
I did pick up Scarlet, but I haven't read that yet.
I'm not interested. James?
Hi.
Hi,
James. I bought a number one.
He coughed up Ray Winston. He's no longer here.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the dinner party test.
This week I bought Infinite Vacation by Nick Spence and Christian Ward. It's number one. It's out on Shadowline Image. I was first told I should buy it by James in our comic shop. And he said, go and buy it. Even if you don't like it, it might be worth something. So I was really excited.
He's good at selling stuff.
He's a consummate salesman. I was really excited, but I thought they might be worth something. So I've kept it in really mint condition.
And then one of your colleagues.
And it was in my work bag yesterday. And one of my stupid king colleagues sat on my bag, and now it's crumpled to fuck.
Not me.
Literally to
fuck. Not you.
If you look in the comic price guide, if such thing even still exists, I'm not sure... But I think the crumple to fuck rating is somewhere just below.
Yeah. It's decreased very in value, fine. Basically.
it's VV crumpled as fuck. Anyway,
but you like Nick Spence, though, anyway. You're reading a couple of books by him.
He's writing Morning Glories, isn't he, at the moment? Which is another Image title that's getting a lot of attention. Christian Ward, however, I absolutely adore. He wrote, if you've been listening to Momcast for a while, you remember very early on I was talking about how much I was enjoying Olympus, which he was also the artist for. He's got a very frenetic line style, but he also colours his own work, and he just uses the most amazing, I don't want to say psychedelic, that's such a trite way of...
It's quite surreal.
It is surreal,
isn't it?
And he tends, in Olympus, and I think in this book as well, he tends to have quite washed out backgrounds, and it's the colour palette is almost telling the story as much as the line work itself. This story, Infinite Vacation, is a story of Mark. And in a nutshell, Mark lives in a world where multiverses, multiple universes, are a reality. Mm. And you're able to travel between universes and basically take an infinite vacation. You can take a vacation in your own alternate life. And Mark is someone who's addicted to taking vacations, and the story...
That's a heady concept.
Yeah. It is very high concept stuff, and quite enjoyable. And I think really, as much as anything, it seems to be a comment on almost a bit like Red Robin last week, almost on the way that we use social medias, and we're fritting between one thing and another, and how modern human society seems to have a very short attention span. Doesn't want to be in the here and now. Always wants to be somewhere else, doing something different. It seems to be talking about that.
Is it a mini series or?
It is. Yeah, I think it's 5-part mini series. Essentially, much of this first issue is setting the scene, but we get to see Mark meet a girl who's part of a movement called...
The Bowel Movement?
No. Bladder Movement.
They aren't called that, are they?
They aren't called the Bladder Movement. Dead Ender.
Dead Ender.
So, clearly, this is probably going to be a kind of, I guess, a clash of cultures story. Clearly, she, unless I've completely misread this, she's probably going to become the love interest, I imagine. Wow. We've lingered on her a little too long at the end of this issue, I think, for this not to be picked up in future issues. Yeah, you'd be surprised. So it's likely to be a clash of culture story and I guess a love story as well. But it's a fascinating concept, a fascinating and beautiful book. What is really disarming is you get to about the sixth page of this book and you see, basically it's exposition. You're finding out all about this multiple realities that you can buy into. Mm. And it's an advert, but the advert is a photo story.
Mm.
So it's a guy acting the advert out with a... I don't know who the guy is, actually.
He's familiar.
It looks like Justin Bateman, but it isn't Justin Bateman.
No, he's got a...
Justin Bateman.
Incredibly...
Jason Bateman.
No, yeah. God, there's nothing Bateman. Like Jason Bateman.
He's got an
he does in a lot of those
incredibly pictures. Expressionful face, though, isn't he?
Expression...
He no.
Expressionful?
He's got a lot of expression in his face.
Yeah.
Expression.
If I'm not sure a word's real, I try and work out a different way of using a word that I know is real.
No, I... What did I mean? I don't know, I'm so confused.
Expressive. He's expressive. Got an exceptionally expressive.
Goodness
expressive
gracious,
face.
Man.
We're really good at this.
Mm. I shouldn't have got so hot under the collar before the pod, should I?
The amazing thing is all of this stuff seems off the cuff and confused, but it's all scripted.
It is. Yes. Yes, it is, Nick.
It's an amazing looking book.
It's an incredible looking book. I just think that Christian Ward does an absolutely outstanding job. It's only really the second book of his that I've read, I'm ashamed, but Olympus, which was my first exposure to him, I thought was amazing. This is just visually mind-blowing.
It's one of a raft of... Sorry, I was going to say, it's one of a raft of very very different-looking books coming out of Image at the moment. Yeah. So
I'd say Nick Spencer's other Image book I'm reading at Morn and Glory took me a long time to warm up to. This, I was... they had me hooked at Hello.
Oh.
Nick Spencer really should pay... James some sort of commission at
Forbidden Planet,
because he's pretty much the reason you've ended up buying all of his stuff.
Oh, absolutely, without
he just keeps putting it in your standing order.
He does. To be fair, James very rarely stitches me up. He's not yet recommended a book to me that I didn't enjoy. So
no,
he's one of those irritating people at a comic book shop who gets to know his customers, kind of works out what they like, and then recommends things to them based on that.
It's been a while since that's come out. Did you buy anything else? Or
I did, but doing? I haven't bought any of it to talk about today. I may next week talk about The Boys issue 50, though.
This was it was a mental week, and I actually had to put a load of stuff back in my standing order to pick up later. So there were loads of books. There were loads of good books, especially Marvel books that I already get in the shop this week. There were a couple of Thor books that I read, and a load of other stuff that is just waiting for me there. But the ones I did pick up, I only picked up four books. One of them was Iron Man 500. It's massive, and the art, it's still written by Matt Fraction, but the art's by loads of different people, and I haven't finished it yet because it's just huge. And it's got a huge, you know, it's quite expensive as well, but it's just chunky as hell.
Still irritates me, that.
What?
When they, do, when they make do it bumper size and then make it a bumper size price.
Yeah, it's a bit much. I'll very briefly mention Daredevil Reborn. I think everyone else already talked about it because you know most countries got it last week and we only just got it this week. But Daredevil Reborn, one of a four-part limited series, written by Andy Diggle, with art by David Gianfelice and colours by Matt Hollingsworth. It's following Matt Murdock. In the aftermath of Shadowland, he's just left, he's just gone, and he's out in the middle of nowhere in Badlands, USA. It's like it's a completely different, it's like it's written by a completely different person from Shadowland. It's like a completely different book. It's a really, really good comic book, one of the best Marvel comics that's come out in ages. The art and the writing is like perfectly in sync with each other, and not only is it one of the best Marvel books, it's one of the best Daredevil books I've read in a really long time. And we were a bit nonplussed by Shadowland, weren't we? I liked it a little bit more than you did, but it felt that reading this made me realise what some of the problems I had with that were.
Mm-hmm.
It feels to me like, and then that made me realise a problem I have with a lot of event books, and maybe we've touched on it before, I don't know. The biggest problem about event books, no matter how well planned they've, you know, how well planned and well laid the plans are for them, and how talented the people are involved with them, there is a point where all of them seem to tip into the state where it's just about getting this plot out of the way, getting it done. You know what I mean? So the comics cease to be about reading a story and enjoying a narrative, and they are basically about getting all of these plot threads dealt with. And Shadowland, I think, suffered more from that than anything else, because there were lots of different books. It was quite a simple story at its core, but there were lots of different books dealing with it, and it just, there were loads of different threads. And I think I get the impression that from reading this, that Andy Diggle enjoyed writing this more than the last few months of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Because there's a point at which you've built up all of this stuff and you've just got to get it done. You know, it becomes a chore to read it a little bit, whereas this is just a joy. It's absolutely lovely. And I think that's a jock cover on the front, which was trailered a little bit in advance, which is lovely.
I remember him tweeting it when he was drawing it, actually.
But Jan Felice's art inside, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but his art inside is just in perfect sync with the covers. It's really sort of nicely designed, really clear, and Matt Hollingsworth sort of picks it all out beautifully. I don't know if you guys picked that up. So.
I did.
Okay.
I didn't.
That was good for you. There's a lovely review on Chris's the Other Murdoch Papers site. Very good review.
I hadn't read it because I hadn't read the comic yet, so I'll go and have a look.
Your views very much reflect her own.
Oh, good. Excellent. I picked up Wolverine and Jubilee. Now, there is a level at which I'm not entirely convinced we should be encouraging Marvel to keep putting out so many Wolverine books. I've complained about my Thor issues, and Thor and Wolverine and Deadpool are all very much characters that are, like, over... The market's kind of oversaturated with books about them. But... I didn't know that this was coming out. It's the first issue in a four-part series. It was only $2.99. And because I wasn't expecting it, it was kind of a shock to see it, and that made me pick it up. I always had a bit of a soft spot for Jubilee as well, because she was one of the last characters introduced to the X-Men universe before I kind of checked out of the X-Men universe. Sure. One of the last good things I think Chris Claremont did with the books. And it's written by Catherine Immonen, and I've always liked the stuff that I've seen her do with her, I guess it's her husband, Stuart Immonen, online. They've done stuff online together. With art by Phil Noto, and there's, or Noto, N-O-T-O. And his art is lovely. There have been loads of, like, I've noticed on Tumblr loads of his images of, like, different superheroes that he's obviously done either professionally or just for fun, have been circulating quite a lot, because they're really good, clean, definitive versions of them. I didn't used to like Phil Noto's art that much, because it was always very watercolory and a bit, I found it a little bit limp. But now, this is really nicely inked. He's inked this really nicely. It's really clear. The cover's by Olivia Coppel. Or I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce it.
I don't know. I can't see the name.
He's a bit of a Marvel superstar at the moment.
Coipel?
Coppel.
I think you think.
I'm not entirely sure.
Because I'm very reliable when it comes to
pronunciations.
So I'm glad you asked. Thank you.
But this is the story. I was unaware of this. That in the recent vampire storyline that went through the X books that I didn't read. I kind of was a bit stubborn about very definitively not reading it, actually. but apparently Jubilee was infected with... She lost her powers when the Scarlet Witch took everybody's powers away. I'm getting really distracted by the dogs. I can't help it, sorry. She lost her powers when everybody got their powers taken away. And to add insult to injury, she was infected with vampirism. So she's now a vampire. And this is basically about how the X-Men have put her in quarantine, and they're trying to heal her with. Well, they're trying to keep her condition under control with blood transfusions from Wolverine. And there's long been this thing about Wolverine that he normally mentors a younger female character. Kitty Pryde, he did that with Kitty Pryde to begin with. Then Jubilee came along. He's kind of doing that with Armour in the X-Men books at the moment, I think. Or certainly he was the last time I read them.
Sure.
But Jubilee was like one of the people he was mentoring. There's a Robin connection. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
You can't really see it in the outfit she wears now, but when Jubilee turned up, her outfit was very closely based on Robin's outfit at the
Cheeky.
Time. And kind of on the Dark Knight Returns Robin as well.
Cheeky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's actually in the DC versus Marvel books that came out in the mid-90s, I think there is a moment where they kind of meet each other and are quite impressed by each other's outfits and stuff. But anyway, so...
They're so narcissistic.
So Jubilee's going through a bit of shit. She's in a bit of a sulky, self-destructive state at the moment. And everyone is trying to manage her condition and help her deal with it, but also trying to keep her from hurting anyone or herself.
Yeah.
And basically the story is about that. She kind of has enough and leaves Utopia, the X-Men's island, and... Towards the end of the book, it looks like the vampire world is trying to get its hooks into her, and obviously she's a bit lost and stuff. I don't know if this book is going to be for everyone, because I am willing to cut Jubilee as a character an awful lot of slack. The way she behaves in this book is kind of typical for someone who's been through quite a lot of shit and is still a relatively young sort of woman. But she does come across as quite sulky, which seems quite natural. You don't tend to see characters this unremittingly downbeat, though, in a Marvel comic. There are a couple of points as well where bits of dialogue between people in it that it feels like there's a line missing that would have made it a joke if there hadn't been. There's a weird comment about horses that Wolverine says to Emma Frost that doesn't seem to really come out of anywhere proper. But otherwise, the dialogue's great. The art's absolutely beautiful. I kind of mentioned Jubilee's like grumpy state of mind. Actually, Catherine Immonen writes her really well. She's convincingly depressed, and without ever saying "I'm depressed," she behaves in that way. And everyone else is convincingly trying to get all up in her face about sorting it out, and she reacts convincingly, begrudgingly. We're really good with the words, aren't we?
Yeah, it's not good today.
I liked it. It's going to be a 4-part series. I think I'm going to persevere with it, even though it's an X-Men mutant mini series, which, you know, you'd think I'd know better by now. But it is really pretty as well. Phil Noto's art is really clean, really beautifully coloured. I'm not sure who coloured it, actually. It's just a really good looking book. And the characterisation in it's really nice.
Does she have classic vampirism? Does she have to only... Is she only able to go out at night?
It doesn't look like it, actually.
Wolverine's blood means that she can...
His healing factor is...
She can stay...
Counteracting the vampirism, is it?
In very light... In light... At dusk, basically, she can still go out. So... Right, so that's that. Mm. And also, we talked about this because we saw this book because we saw an advert for it in the back of who is Jake Ellis last week or the week before. Memoir number one. I wasn't expecting it to come out this quickly, actually. Memoir number one from Image at $3.50 pet price point with a lovely John Cassaday cover on the front, because that's where you tend to put covers. I don't know how it would work out if you put them in the middle somewhere. Which is written by Ben McCall and is drawn by Nikki Cook. Now, I don't know Nikki Cook from the internet. I know Nikki Cook's work from the internet. I haven't seen any full books by her, but I've seen loads of art on her blogs and stuff. I think from the old Warren Ellis forums or The Engine or something. I've never seen her work in a full book. I should probably say a little bit about the story first. It's basically set 10 years after something happened in this small town, which made everybody forget everything. Everyone in this town suffered from amnesia. and it follows the story of this really cocky, kind of obnoxious, obnoxious journalist who wants to write a book, I think, or a feature, or a series of feature articles about what's gone on in this town 10 years later, and try and get to the bottom of maybe what happened. And he goes there. When he gets there, nobody really wants to talk to him, and everything's a little bit weird. And it's a very, there's lots of macabre, small time paranoia weirdness going on.
It's eerie.
Yeah, it is. It's quite creepy. it's only the first issue. It's a really interesting concept. Ben McCall does a better than average job of the writing. There were points at which I'm not entirely certain it flowed, the dialogue flowed as much as I'd like. But it's possible that because it's part of what I'm thinking of as a batch of books from Image that include Who is Jake Ellis, everything was perfect in that book as far as I'm concerned. Everything just fired on all barrels. And so this is really good. But it just wasn't as confident, the writing wasn't as confident, I thought, as in that book. And Nikki Cook's art is really lovely. Her characters are really expressive. It reminds me a lot of, not just because it's in black and white, because there's lots of acting going on in the faces of the characters, and because her line is really bold, it reminds me a little bit of Becky Cloonan. There's a lot more going on each page than, I mean, we tend to see Becky Cloonan's work when Brian Wood's writing for her, and he keeps things nice and spare and open. Mm. Whereas there is a lot going on in this book, and Nikki Cook's having to cram an awful lot into each page. And I'm not saying she's a copyist or anything. They've got very similar sorts of very bold, bold styles. Do you know you're what? Kind of frowning.
Yeah, because it reminded me of something as well, but it wasn't Becky Cloonan. It looked very much like the pages were popping out from 2008. I thought I'd completely forget. Do you remember I really enjoyed Savage?
I forget
who drew that.
I can't remember either, but it's like halfway between the two.
But it's very similar, very clear lines, very expressive faces. Yeah.
Becky Cloonan has quite you can see a manga influence there slightly in the shapes of her characters' faces, whereas that isn't here quite so much. So yeah, I can see exactly what you mean. Mm. But that really bold, expressive sort of style of inking and stuff is what I see as similar. And everything's quite fluid in this. Yeah. But like I said, I don't think this is her first published work, but it might be the first book that I've seen through Image, and it works really well. Each panel is lovely. I don't know if the layouts, I think given time, the layouts will improve a little bit, but I just think it's a lovely looking book. And it's an interesting story, and I don't know how long the series is going to last, but I think I'm in it for the long haul. It's one of six, and if it carries on being as strong as this first issue, I think I'm going to quite enjoy picking it up.
Cool.
It is $3.50, so it is slightly more expensive than mainstream books. But the important thing, actually, no, it isn't, because most of the Marvel books are $3.99 now, aren't they?
Yeah.
A lot of the bigger ones are, anyway. But it's worth remembering when you're picking up an Image book that in a lot of cases, because of the business model being slightly different there, a lot of the risk is shouldered by the creators. They don't necessarily make that much money unless people buy the books. They're not salaried or anything. So it is worth picking up, and it's worth supporting books like this because it's trying to do something a little bit different. Okay.
I agree. I bought it myself. I haven't had an opportunity to read it, but I flipped through it. I really enjoyed the art. But haven't had a chance to read the story, so I couldn't comment. So I won't.
Don't comment. Don't say anything.
You're reading it now, though, Joan. How are you enjoying it? Is it good?
All three books. I've literally just sat here and almost had to read them back to back.
Yeah, it's good. That's all right. You probably deserve it. You should have done that while I was reading mine. Giggling all the way through.
I find that very intriguing. I read it and then I realised I couldn't stop reading it.
Actually, because it's quite one of the issues with the other Daredevil books is there's been loads of dialogue, loads of exposition and stuff like that, whereas this is really spare. And I'd say that Dead of Reborn is a book you can pick up with no foreknowledge of the character or with the or of everything that's happened in the last, when everything else has been so continuity heavy, because you haven't really been reading Daredevil, have you?
No.
You can just pick it up and have a look.
I might have to.
Cool.
You can just read mine while we're talking, Jane.
That's
all right.
That's okay, I won't be that rude. I just laugh uncontrollably.
Gee. Pass them here, I don't want someone to sit on them.
Oh, I was sort of...
because it's awful when people sit on your comments.
You know, like when you put a baby on a sofa, you don't want her to roll off, so you put loads and loads and loads of cushions around her, and then there's a cushion on the floor. That's kind of what I was doing to your comic.
And then accidentally smothered them.
No.
With all of the cushions.
I don't want to do that.
No, I know you don't want to. That's why it's accidental.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of what accidental means.
I won't
means.
Do that.
Okay. No. Well, don't do that.
All right. Wait, no. Yeah.
Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
Coming at you from my fortified moon base in the Himalayas, it's me! Anyway, today, if you'll permit me, Momcast, I'm going to break away from the potential things I said I'd review last week to instead talk about Power Girl 20 and Justice League of America 53. First up, Power Girl. And who the hell thought this series would still be around come issue 20 of all things? I mean, I've loved every single issue of this series, but I, like anyone, am aware that Power Girl isn't exactly an A-grade character, so to see the old girl running as strong as ever at this non-milestone is very pleasant. And the issue itself is bloody great! Judd Winnick's been writing this title for 8 issues now, and whilst the pace has been considerably less than what it was under Palmiotti and Gray, it's been trundling along quite well, building up a perfectly enjoyable tie-in to Justice League Generation Lost. And hey, it's done an admirable job of giving Power Girl a new, powerless male sidekick, and done away with that nuisance of an empowered girl the fans like to call Terror. I mean, what was the deal with that? One empowered female character of book, people! Can't have too much estrogen because that would anger a 40-year-old pervert twat to a comic that was mainstream audience! I'm sorry, went on tangent there. The point is that Winnick has done a great job writing the comic lately, and here is no exception, with him providing yet another situation for Sam Basri to go nuts with brilliant fight scenes, such as this issue's small fight between Power Girl and a giant forearm tentacle-headed albino ape called Caspian. And my god, does Basri knock this one out of the park. I remember saying to no one in particular when Amanda Connor finished her run on the character that no one could possibly even come close to matching what she managed to do artistically on the book, but damn me to burn in hell if that's not what Basri's managing. He's still no Connor, not by a mile, but what we get instead is someone carving his own path whilst retaining the key design elements of the book, in keeping expressive characters and tasteful cheesecake, and I mean tasteful. There are moments when the actual panels will be framed by Power Girl's enormous breasts, and yet it never becomes anything more than a pleasant element of the art. It's done maturely, without mention, and almost in parody. If we had more artists like this and less like Ed Benes or... who do the feminists hate? I don't know, some bollocks. So yes, Power Girl 20. Good comic, very pleasing, reviewed without spoilers. Go, get, need. Now, to talk about Justice League of America 53, which is good, but barely, and far less groundbreaking than DC's best-known team book should be. Handled by James Robinson and Mark Bagley, this issue of JLA finishes up the Omega storyline, which has been about some bad guy called Omega who's threatening the world because alternate Earth? Evil Justice League? To say the plots felt a little bit overbearing now would almost sound like a lie, considering how little I have to say of it. But it's been pretty heavily narrated, and it's felt like nothing's really come of it, other than the reintroduction of an old character, Blue Jay, and his subsequent immediate removal. A great one-shot about Starman and Kong Gorilla, a name I'll never tire of saying. Kong Gorilla. Congo-rilla. And the weird reverting of Supergirl back to her dark, sexy, exploitative persona. Something that still isn't resolved by the end of this issue. What the fudge, people? If it sounds like I'm kind of non-committal to this issue, then it's because of Mark Bagley. He's an artist who meets deadlines and tells a story well enough. But his style is the most bland and generic thing I've ever seen. And somehow the basic features of a face constantly move from their designated positions. I suppose it's all part of being a fast artist, but it sincerely does nothing for me and pretty much ruins the pace of the issue. Though that's not to say that my apathy is all on him. Robinson is still not quite on the money. doing too much narrating and not really putting enough stock into a reader's ability to work things out for themselves. That and the Starman and Congorilla one-shot is only referred to at the end, in a move that comes almost out of the blue in the issue itself. But still, JLA isn't a bad comic, it's just got problems. With any luck, the replacement of Bagley with Brett Booth in the next storyline will endear the series to me a little more, but overall it just feels like something's missing. Something to make this more than just a meaningless book for the characters involved. Dare I say it? I actually think this is the one comic that needs to feel important. To actually have events happen in it that affect the status quo in some minor way for both the DCU at large and the characters featured in the comics. But enough of that buttfuckery. I've talked for too long and I want to get back to playing badminton with a koala in the Philippines. So away I go. Whoosh! I'm still here, aren't I? Balls.
Con season starting soon.
It is very soon. I was, if you've been on Twitter, you've probably seen me trying to get together a list, near enough definitive list of the cons this year. There's a reason I'm thinking about UK cons. I listened to Geek Syndicate this week and their interview with Mark Millar, in which they do an excellent job. Mm-hmm. And I think they certainly hold him accountable when he starts becoming a bit hyperbolic.
Nice pronunciation.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's
good. certainly he makes a couple of very grand claims that the Kapow Con, which is obviously the one that he's promoting, will be the first for 20 years with panels.
Mm.
And Barry from Geek Syndicate, I did an excellent job of saying, well, actually, because he was saying, have panels and you'll get the mix with the creators. It'd be nice for them to all get together. Barry did a great job of saying, well, actually, all the cons I go to, you're just describing the experience I have.
Yeah, there are always panels.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can talk to the people afterwards, yeah.
I have to say, after listening to that, I think I understand a little more about where Kapow thinks it's coming from, where it's positioning itself, and I think I understand what it's trying to do. It's not trying to be what I would think of as a UK con. When I think of a UK con, I think of the sort of thing like Bristol, like Leeds, which isn't particularly glitzy, isn't particularly flash, but you get great access to creators, you get a great mix of exhibitors, and you get a great social scene surrounding it.
Yeah.
That I don't think you're going to have with Kapow. I don't think you're going to stay in a hotel, all the creators are going to be there, and you'll all be able to mix in the bar the night after. I don't see Jonathan Ross, Jimmy Carr, those sort of people mixing it up with the geek crowd in the bar before or after the con.
No.
It's a different sort of
in
thing.
In that instance, do you think maybe what Mark Millar means is that him and the other creators will get to mix with starry people?
Or if you pay £178, you will too if you buy a VIP ticket. They've sold out of VIP tickets. Yeah. So whatever we think about them...
No, I know, it's just £178 is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but whatever we think about them, I know what I think, we probably all think the same thing about them. But there's a demand.
If I had £170 and £178, if I had £178 spare, I would definitely pay that so that I could rub my face up against someone who's famous and therefore better than me.
Oh, Nick, of course I'd do that. I think we all would.
because I think it's a good idea to put people on more of a pedestal than they're already on. That's cynicism, isn't it? Oh, that's outrageous.
You pass the dinner party test, Nick. Oh. It's fine.
What I think this is an industry expo.
Yeah.
Okay? It's DC, Marvel, maybe Image, some of the large independent creators, showing their wares to the UK market. And I will agree with him when he says that doesn't happen at other cons.
Mm.
Marvel, there is no presence in the UK at cons. Again, as the Geek Syndicate guys point out themselves on their podcast, I should say. And DC, again, they mention this, that there's only really a presence at Bristol.
Yeah.
So that's why it's different. It's an industry showcase. There's going to be movies and all sorts there. That's fine. It's a more... I said mainstream to you yesterday, and I think it's trying to appeal to maybe to a more mainstream audience, because I think if we're honest amongst ourselves, from my con experience, it kind of does pander more towards an ingrained fan. Do you think is that unfair? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. It is. It's worth bearing in mind, though, that if you create something that excludes those ingrained fans, you're relying on an awful lot of mainstream people to come through the doors for it to be worth bothering.
I wasn't saying whether I thought that was a good...
No.
I think and look, and what I'm saying about it appeals to ingrained fans is there's no flashy bullshit and shining lights. It is, this is the stuff you're interested in.
Yeah.
Come and have a look at it and talk to people. Whereas I think Kapow is about razzmatazz, about show business, and about reflecting some of the things that I'm quite uncomfortable about in our society at the moment anyway. But that's fine. I think it will have a place in the market. Mm. I don't think it's going to have a place in the heart of very many of the sort of comic book fans that I know.
Yeah.
But that's because the majority of comic book fans I know have a deep ingrained passion for small press and independent comics as well, and don't just look at the big two for their entire input of entertainment. Okay.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Where is Kapow going to be based?
It's in London.
It is in London.
It's the exhibition centre's near King's Cross. I forget the name of
the Excel.
No.
Not for nothing, but one thing he's kind of ignoring there is that Marvel and DC did, I think, used to have a presence at conventions a long time ago.
No, he mentioned before Bristol. He mentions that in the...
And the main reason they stopped coming was because... I don't think...
It's probably not commercially
viable.
The market's not massive.
Is it crass to say the UK scene, on the one hand, the market's not massive, on the other... UK people aren't necessarily as interested in going, like, the general UK person isn't as interested in going to a place on the off chance that they might get to suck someone famous's ego. It's just not necessarily something that the mass of people are interested in doing here. I don't know, we will see.
I'm afraid I don't want to be particularly dismissive about it. If that's what people like, that's fine. The tickets look like they're going to sell out.
Yeah, of course.
VIP tickets are sold out. The tickets for the carnival but sold out. It's going to be a very popular, very well attended event, no matter what we think.
Well, it's in a couple of months' time, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. See what happens around that time.
My personal opinion of it is, as much as it's not the sort of thing I want to attend, if that convention brings a few more people, if it sparks a few more people to read comic books who maybe wouldn't have before, that then takes them on a voyage where they discover the sort of comic books that we maybe enjoy. Because I started off by reading, when I started reading the American format comic books, I started off with Marvel and DC. It is a gateway drug.
I think it's
fair to say. If it gets a few people into the scene who maybe weren't before, because I think it'll attract people because there's big names, there's going to be an exclusive movie reveal there, maybe it's not such a
big Kick-Ass 2!
I don't think that's going to be the movie.
I don't think you're going to be the movie.
But I think one thing that we've spoken about before, that I think we had a concern about, I've seen on Twitter about, people talking on Twitter about as well, is what sort of effect it have on the convention scene in the UK?
Mm-hmm.
Will it price people out of going to other conventions? And that led me to asking the question on Twitter, is asking people. I had a list of conventions, found out at the moment. I've got a list of about 12 that we have in the UK at the moment.
Are you going to read them out in order?
I'm going to read them out in the order that I've got them written down.
Which isn't in any particular order.
I know you like it when I read a list.
I love it.
We should have some cakes. We can maybe talk about these
as I read them out, maybe to break up the list.
Mm.
Maybe.
That would work. So MCM is probably, I think it's fair to say, Kapow's closest rival.
Yeah.
So go on.
It's okay.
MCM is probably Kapow's biggest rival. They've got obviously a presence in London. They have two conventions in London that are big events. Obviously, David, late last... Well, it would have been October last year, wasn't it? sent us some reports from MCM. They have two, though. It's one on the 27th to the 29th of May, one on the 28th to the 30th of October. And that's the most expensive of the UK cons that I've come across so far. That's £27 for a weekend pass.
And that's in London you'd have to stay over. That's going to be more expensive in travelling to London.
Unless you live in London.
Well, yeah, but...
From our point of view, that's something that's there to stay over. MCM also have a presence this year in Manchester. There's a con on the 30th of July. However, I couldn't find out pricing for that. It wasn't available on the website. There's also in Telford, there's an MCM Midlands, and that's on February 11th, so that's soon. That's a one-day-only event. That's a £5 entrance fee.
Okay, so the MCM expos are a mixture of indie and small press and professional, mm-hmm. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's all sorts. I don't think they try to exclude anyone in particular.
No, it's, yeah.
Yeah, Kapow is the next I've got here. He's obviously 9th and 10th of April. And I've written in a rather sniffy way, professionals only. I mean by that when I was listening to the interview, and I think they've made a conscious decision to keep the indie crowd out, basically. They knew what they wanted it to be. That's fine, it's their con. They can do what they like with it. £25.50 for a weekend pass, or as we say, £178 for a VIP ticket. Also in February is the Cardiff Expo, which I think that's the first expo that's going to be held in Cardiff, new this year. Held, though, by, I think it's Fantasy Events, who do Bristol.
Oh.
That's a single day, from what I could make out, £2.50 on the door in advanced. But this is one of a few smaller English conventions where, frankly, British, because it's in Wales. Yes. It's one of a few of the UK cons. Finding information on the net was next to impossible. I don't think the con scene, the individual cons, do a great job of promoting themselves.
Yeah. I think that particular one is co-sponsored by Goldie Looking Chain and Torchwood.
Really?
So they're probably a bit busy to put the website together.
That's fair enough, yeah. obviously, Thought Bubble will be in mid-November. There's few details... There's few details at present on the site, but it's going to be over 2 days this year.
I can tell you what you need to know about that. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Of course it'll be awesome, yeah. A little bit terrified over 2 days. I'm going to be skint. Bristol, obviously, which has always been in my mind, has been the big UK con for a while.
Mm.
Not in terms of size, but the one that I...
Yeah, it's been for a while. It's been the main one for a while. I think it was the only really big, only one of any decent size at all.
And so. Again, that's fantasy events. That's on the 14th, 15th of May. £14 for weekend pass. Obviously, there's Bix at the Think Tank in Birmingham. No information at the moment. It's likely to be mid October. No information on how
What's
much.
What's the Think Tank?
It's a sort of centre, sort of science. Well, it's sort of. Science exhibitions and all sorts of things like that.
Is
but
it
they
the,
hire
the
out
conference
a,
park thing that they've got there.
Sort of, yeah.
Because I've been to a conference in Birmingham and it's scary. The conference park is big and scary.
It might not be in the same one. It was quite big, but
I don't know.
Sorry, I feel bad for you.
No, it's fun. Good. It's just a bit scary. I like being scared.
Can I just get through the rest of this fucking list? I'm finding lists as tedious as you are.
But you've realised now if you don't say the last few, then you're giving them it's unfair.
I've committed to it both here and on Twitter.
Yeah.
Both of you retweeted me committing to talk about it on Twitter.
Did I retweet that? That doesn't seem like something I'd encourage you to do.
I know, I was amazed. You're a massive jerk. One that I wasn't aware of, found out about today, Caption Small Press Expo, which I really want to go to. It's in Oxford.
I've been to Caption, it's lovely.
Good for you.
It's bijou.
Good, really pleased. It's in the summer.
So you can cycle.
Yeah, and the ticket pricing's to be announced.
It's always not very much.
Yeah. London Small Press Expo in that London is on the 12th of March. That's a £2 ticket for the one-day con.
Uh-huh.
Exeter Comic Expo, which was one I was not aware of.
Where's Exeter?
It's near...
It's west.
Canada. And it's part of the Exeter Animation Festivals, also a fantasy event.
Events
fantasy
event.
Events event. That's on the 20th of February, £2 for a one-day ticket. And finally, it seems me asking... no, it sounds really vague. Well, it seems me asking, this is going to cause this particular convention to go ahead this year.
Really?
Yeah, well, no.
Why are you talking like that?
Because that's my cocky voice.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I believe it's going to go ahead. I mentioned it. Someone else told me what about Leeds, and then a few people who I copied into the tweets were saying how exciting it is and how they should get on with arranging it. And that's the London Alternative Comics Expo again, which is a small press thing.
Leeds.
What did I say?
London.
You said that London.
Did I say London?
You didn't say that London, you said London.
Sorry, Leeds Alternative Comics Expo, which will be in the spring, with ticket pricing to be announced. So that's 12.
And that's from people we've asked on Twitter. There could be more, because like you said, they don't seem to be very well... So a lot of them don't seem to be very well publicised.
But there's no purely manga events on there. There's no sort of memorabilia events, which MCM also do, or comic marts, which people often attend as well. That's a lot of stuff. I worked out today, if you went to what I would call the bigger cons, so if you decided you wanted to hit MCM, you wanted to hit Kapow, Leeds, Bristol and Bix, working out sort of like an average budget of around £400 or £500 to include accommodation and subsistence, you're spending about £2,500-£3,000 just on conventions this year.
It's not much though, is it?
Do you not think? Okay.
You're spending the equivalent of your holiday allowance.
Give me seed money of £100 and a ticket to Vegas. I can make us double that in 2 days. I've got a system.
I don't think I'd see you again, and then there would be a missing persons thing for you, and you'd come back dressed as Winnie the Pooh, but with patches of your fur missing, and you would have white hair because of all the shocking things you've seen, and would have Ray Winston's accent. So, no, I'm not going to do that.
Sometimes it's best just to leave her to it, isn't it? That was brilliant. I'm a bit scared now. And I don't want that to happen.
I think essentially that is the Momcast definitive opinion on conventions. Winnie the Pooh with fur coming off it.
And you've seen such awful things that your hair has turned completely white. If you're me or Jane, and if you're James, your stubble has turned white.
It's turning white now. It's turning white,
yeah. George Beedham!
Wah! Wah!
Scouse Drawther!
Wah! Wah!
Hello, monkeys. It's George Beedham here, Drawther of the Mighty Jambo. You'll have to forgive me if I'm a bit croaky, but I've just about lost my voice, and I've decided to use the last of it to talk to you lovely people. Because James did a quick review of Red Robin last week, I forget the number it was, I decided to throw in my two cents, because I got the first couple of trades a couple of months back, and it's a fantastic book, isn't it? It's by, who's it by? Chris Yost is doing the writing for now. Ramon Bax, I think, does the majority of the art. Apart from a crossover with Batgirl in the second volume. I don't know who does the art for that. Should have done my research. Anyway, so the storyline is that Bruce is missing, assumed dead. Dick's recruited Damian to be his new Robin. So Tim's off out searching the world for proof that he's not mental and that Bruce is actually alive. This leads to him bumping into the League of Assassins and Ra's al Ghul and helping them take out an organisation called the Council of Spiders when actually double-crossing them and causing a lot of damage. Then in the second volume it's Ra's al Ghul taking his revenge by trying to kill pretty much everyone in the Bat family, and having Tim run round all of the city trying to save them at once. But more importantly than that, it's a coming-of-age story for Tim. I'd have to share this theory about the Robins that I read somewhere. It might have been Comics Alliance, I'm not sure. But all the Robins are Batman's attempts to make a better superhero. See, Dick is the Batman that already had a mentor, had a Batman to show him how to do it, and he's a lot more secure in himself. He's got friends, he can relate to people in a way that Bruce never can. Jason, on the other hand, is Batman if he didn't have anyone to look up to till it was too late and he was sent down, and he's a very angry young man and all the rest of it. But Tim is different from the other two. Tim is who Batman would like to be like himself, because Tim is the one who discovers on his own that Bruce is Batman, that Dick is Robin at the time, or maybe Nightwing. I think it was Robin. Yeah, and so when he confronts him, Bruce just says, all right, fine, but before we get into anything, go off, train with all the masters I trained with, become, you know, better equipped to deal with what we're going to be facing out there. So the thing about Tim is he's the sum of all his tutors. And there's a lovely little scene in the second volume of this where he's eyeing up members of the Spider Council, and Ra's al Ghul is talking about him in a cutaway, and he's watching with one of his assassins, and they're all like, oh no, he's going to be killed. And Ra's is like, no, look at him, he's already won. And it cuts back to Tim, and he's just marking in his head who he needs to take out first. Like, there's a guy with guns who he needs to take out because he's a distance fighter, and then he's plotting how to get everyone else in each other's way, and he's just everyone he's ever trained with in that scene, because he plans like Bruce. Later in the volume, it shows he's made friends like Dick, because instead of running Ra's gauntlet in Gotham, he gets a load of the Titans like Kid Flash and Superboy and Wonder Girl and Batgirl and et cetera, et cetera, to save all these people. Instead of running around himself doing it, he knows when to ask for help, which is something that Bruce has never been able to do. And yeah, you can tell he's my favourite of the Robins. That's kind of because the book that got me into DC Comics in the first place was a title called Young Justice, which sadly has never been collected, and I think there's about 2 trades of it out, which is just an absolute travesty. Yeah, that's from the 90s. It's Robin, Superboy and Impulse as a super team, which works really well. But I'll probably ramble on about that another time. Back to these books. They're great. I can't recommend them highly enough. People who got a bit annoyed at Grant Morrison, I guess, is the best way to describe it, with all his really heavy continuity stuff. This sits alongside and is informed by the death of Bruce Wayne, the return of Bruce Wayne, and Batman RIP and all the rest of it. But it's not dependent on knowing every single little detail. Like, I mean, I love the Grant Morrison books, but if you don't read them all in one go, you have no chance of understanding what the hell's going on beyond the very, very basics. So this is a great title to watch Tim stop being the whiny kid in the Teen Titans that he's been for years since his dad died in an identity crisis, and become, hopefully, who he was meant to be.
Apparently, when you've got 2 barking dogs, you can throttle the life out of one of them. The other one just keeps barking. And I'm not even convinced that the one that this hypothetical person throttled to death was the one that was barking.
We need to give you a penalty, because at the beginning you said you were going to mention it. I think that's about 3 or 4 times
you've mentioned it. The listener probably can't even hear it.
They probably don't care. They're like, what are you going about? What's a dog?
Jane!
So, Jane!
Hello.
What are you going to spotlight for us today?
Today I'm going to spotlight A History of Violence, written by John Wagner and art by Vince Locke.
You have no trouble with John Wagner.
Yeah.
Matt Wagner gave you so much trouble.
Only the one time.
Oh. It seems like it was more often than that.
It was only once, and then you guys ripped it out of me for the every time I did. Madame Xanadu, so... Because, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean
I get all nervous when I'm saying names, because I think, don't say it wrong, don't say that.
Don't say something dirty.
It's happened to me at work as well, and James has taken a mickey out of me about that too.
You're so evil.
No, I've never done that.
No.
Are you both still wearing your work badges?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know who we are.
So you know who you are.
Anyways, I believe you're both familiar with these chaps.
John Wagner is one of the main Judge Dredd writers and has been forever. James is going, I don't know him.
Oh, okay.
He probably does. I said so last week anyway, but he's just a horrible...
Vince Locke did.
John Wagner.
And Vince Locke did a stint on Sandman. He's also done some really nice comic-y stuff for, I think, Caliber Comics. I like his art.
Yeah.
I think he probably does like role-playing books and stuff as well. I love him.
Okay. I'd seen the film before. I didn't even know it was based on a comic book until Mark, our friend Mark, who did
Commode?
No. I wish he was my friend. he would be really good at just shouting at people for you. You could just wind him up, and then just let him go around and shouting at people.
James not
like.
Very good at shouting at people for
no.
you.
No. Because he's not actually a Larry person.
Hey, James?
No.
Oh, I have my moments.
He does. But, yeah. Not Larry in the way I'd need you to be Larry, so...
I'd do more sort you're of passive-aggressive and sulky, really.
So you're more of a every other sort of dog than a pit bull.
Exactly.
Dogs are so passive-aggressive. They've always got that sad look on their face. My life's so hard. That's what a dog is thinking every time you look at them. Can you stop? No, because Jane's really looking at me now, and James is just...
I'm trying to work out what dog I am. I'm thinking maybe a Newfoundland.
Yeah, I think you are. Yeah. You're very passive, but gigantic.
Yeah.
You've got webbed feet.
I have got webbed feet, yeah.
Aww.
No, I haven't.
So have
is it webbed feet or webbed toes?
Huh?
A webbed toes, then.
Yeah, because webbed feet doesn't
work. Actually, webbed paws.
The film by David Cronenberg, was like a peculiar film for him.
It was.
It's not a horror movie, but it's...
It's pretty horrific.
Yeah.
It's not a horror film, but it is pretty horrific. And I'd seen that, and I mentioned... And then I found out it was based on a comic book. I was like, oh my God, how did I not know this? That's such an excellent... I love that film. It's one of my favourite films. I don't have a thing about violent films. This might have come up recently with a couple of my friends. I just like a lot of films, and some of them are violent.
They happen to be violent.
Yeah.
My wife's parents... forever mock me about my apparent love of gory films, even though I just watch lots of films, because she told them about watching Battle Royale with me after we'd only been seeing each other for a little while. She was explaining. She said they'd really like it, and then she explained what happened in it, and they were like, so now I'm the guy who likes the film about people whose heads explode
off. Battle Royale is a brilliant film.
It really is.
Battle Royale 2?
Not quite so much.
No. Anyway, so I obviously loved the film, so I borrowed this from John, who was jumping up and down about me borrowing it, so I finally read it.
That is the first time I've ever seen a copy of it. You shouldn't feel bad. The fact that it is based on a film is buried so deep in the credits of that film, and this book is not that easy to get hold of, or at least you'd never see it in shops or anything.
No, it really isn't easy to get hold of at all, which when I was looking to buy this, and I mentioned it to John, and I was like, oh, yeah, I find it really hard to find it, and he's like... Oh, that's fine. I've got a copy. You can borrow my copy.
Don't believe for a minute he said it in such an effete manner.
He said it in the nervous, shaky, bunny in headlights way that he does.
With his funny little head.
He looks.
The funny thing is, we describe him like this, but when he comes on the podcast, he basically said he's more competent and confident than any one of us. It's just in real life that he struggles. He's afflicted, bless him. He still doesn't listen to the show, does he?
No.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
But you've just been nice about him.
A bit. It's a bit of a backhanded set of compliments.
Okay.
Anyway,
The story follows a seemingly very normal chap called Tom McKenna, who owns a cafe in some little town in somewhere...
Shit Sticks, USA.
This is a problem when I read things days in advance. I want to say Pennsylvania.
The funny thing is, it presents as almost exactly the same problem as when you read things literally just before the podcast.
I'm just an idiot.
No, I always forget names of places.
I think it's based in Philadelphia, I'm sorry, I'll find it. Owns a cafe in a small town, has a wife, children, seemingly normal life. One evening he's closing up the cafe, saying goodbye to some of the customers, and two very aggressive men come into the cafe and start demanding coffee from him. He's sort of, no, sorry guys, we're closed. They won't take no for an answer, so he thinks, okay, I'll just serve them coffee and they'll be on their way. They pull a gun on him, and the seemingly very humble, nice, next-door neighbour-looking guy manages to whip the gun out of their hands, pulls a few very nifty moves on them, and shoots one of them, and the other one is thrown through the shop window.
He takes their shit apart.
Basically,
that sounds almost exactly like the scene in the film.
Yes, it follows the film is followed very closely. The film follows a bit very closely up to a point, and then that point is very definite where they both go different ways. And we'll get into that in a bit. So shoots him, and then subsequently the press are all very sort of crowding around, finding out why he's, you know, what a hero who he is, and he's on all the papers, and he makes it, you know, a bit more nationally, and his picture is recognised, and it's recognised by somebody who thinks he's somebody else. He thinks he's Joey, and he comes,
not Joey from Friends.
God, I hope not.
No,
that would be a bit weird. Why would he think he's Joey from Friends?
I don't know. That's the only Joey I know. Oh, and Joey Lawrence, who's in lots of TV programs. Sorry, James. It's like a disease. I actually can't help myself.
No, that's fine. I should have probably made notes.
While you're checking that, what does a Philadelphia accent sound like, James?
Oh, do you know, I really don't know.
Try and find one in your repertoire.
Gee, hello.
What?
I'm from Philadelphia.
Philly.
And I've got some cream cheese and bagels for you.
It's silly in Philly.
It is silly chilly in Philly.
It's funny because the town he's in is supposed to be quite quiet. So it might not be in Philadelphia, because as we all know from watching the documentary The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Philadelphia is actually quite a dangerous place.
Hey, look! There's Tom Hanks!
It's just another quite dangerous small town USA, so I don't know.
Just small town USA. Small shit town sticks. USA. Shit sticks USA.
I can't remember. I did read this at the weekend. And I was actually, to be fair, so distracted by the end of this book, I forgot what happened.
Sorry, I've got a friend who calls all very small villages that.
Buttfuck, I wasn't USA. Just...
I didn't develop...
Tourette's
then. Buttfuck USA.
Oh, Joey Buttafuoco. That's a person as well.
Yes.
Anyways,
so these guys, mafia-looking guys, come into the cafe, and Mr. Torino, very old man who's missing an eye, comes in and starts calling him Joey, and Tom's like, no, you've got me mistaken with somebody else, they are persistent, and it ends up with an altercation at Tom's home involving his wife, his daughter, and his son. That's when it comes out that he is Joey. In the film, if I remember correctly, it has been a while since I watched it. In the film, this is where things start to go different. To this point where they come in, they find him, and he's like, yes, I am them, I'll come meet you. In the film, is it not his brother turns out to be the mafia boss, and he goes back to settle score with him?
It's a family thing.
Yeah, it's a family thing.
Probably the best way to put it. Yeah.
It goes off in a very, you know, a different direction. There's no flashbacks, there's no sort of... There's only a few references back to why they'd fallen out. There was no sort of in-depth stories to what had happened. It was all very skimmed on the top, and then you got to the scene to the scenes towards the end, which were very violent. In this one, this is set out in three chapters. So at the end of the first chapter is pretty much the film follows up the same point, and then that goes down a different route. In the second chapter, it flashes back to when Joey was young, and then you find out about a relationship he had with his one of his friends Richie, whose brother was sort of getting mixed up in the mafia, and then his brother ends up getting killed because he was taking money, and the mob group that he was with wanted his cut. So it was all very heavy mafia based, a lot of made men involved in this flashback, and it was all very dominant of the area of New Jersey that lived in Was it Jersey or Manhattan? Somewhere in New York.
Probably.
It was somewhere in New York.
New Jersey is near New York, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the adjacent state.
Yeah, sorry, Manhattan then. Mm. Downtown Manhattan, so I think
New
it
York.
Is. Yeah,
we know how those people talk, don't we, James?
You guys are violent guys. I want to hear about a history of violence.
That's exactly how they sound.
And so Richie's brother gets killed over a very small matter of money. He's very angry. Joey lives with his grandmother. His parents died at a young age. Obviously good friends with Richie. Richie's very angry, and they decide to get their revenge.
Mm-hmm.
So they take out the main mob boss. It's all very... It's the backstory I found really, really good. I don't think it would really worked in the film. It would have been too long. It would have gotten a bit boring, I guess. But in the actual comic itself, it was really great to watch this whole plan unveiled before your eyes of how they were going to do it. These two kids, they're only teenagers, literally 14 or 15 years old.
Mm.
And they take out the mob boss, and they blow up the restaurant that they're eating in. That they're always there, and they plan this over a certain amount of time. And they've got all the weaponry they need. They even meet this weird hippie in the middle of the woods to buy all their stash and to practice with it. And you know, the one thing that they want is a tear gas bomb. So this guy goes off and gets some tear gas bomb, comes back and actually launches it at them. They're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? He's like, well, you need to know what it feels like. You need to know what to expect so you know how to react. And it's sort of a weird... He didn't ask any questions why these kids wanted all this stuff. Mm. He was like, look, whatever you want it for, you want it for. But he was very, very much a sort of guiding voice to them how they should do this. So they built
I'm
not sure that guy entirely understood the hippie ethos.
No, he got stoned a lot though, so maybe that's what he thought it was about.
Yeah, I don't know that's
it'd look hair.
I don't know if there's a causal effect between getting high and selling teenagers weapons.
You should never trust a hippie.
That's true.
So you find out, and Mr. Torino is obviously part of the mob clan as well, and he gets injured and loses an eye. He loses an eye later on, but he gets injured in that. He's literally just about to go into the restaurant when it blows up, so obviously he's got a score to settle with them. Then they think it's all sort of gone quiet for a while. Joey's keeping his head down, but Richie just cannot keep his mouth shut and ends up shouting about how much they stole some money from them as well. They're sort of killing two birds with one stone. They'll get some money because Joey's grandmother needed an operation on her heart, which they couldn't afford, and obviously Richie's family were a bit hard up, so they've got this money now. Joey's doing a sensible thing. Well, sensible thing if you're going to do something like this, and keep his mouth shut, his head down, and not being splashing the cash.
There is a correct way to get away with crimes like this.
Don't do them.
Well, no, that's not getting away. That's a typical girl answer. That's what my wife would say. She'd say, don't do them, that's the easiest way. No, you just...
It's a mum response, actually.
You don't buy... mums normally girls, aren't they? You don't buy you don't buy anything too showy. You don't blab to any of your buddies. If you do blab to them, you kill them.
The good fella rules.
Yeah, I could totally get away with something like that.
Is there a potential, Jane, that if the characters in this book had followed that rule, it would have been boring as fuck?
Yeah.
But there's nothing boring as fuck as
for a writer. You really don't understand drama at all, do you?
Well, that's why all of my stories are short stories.
Were you going to say all my stories are shit stories?
There was a vampire, and he was terrorising people, right. And then they had read that you can find their coffins, so they went there during the day.
The end.
Or there's a bank robbery. The people planned it really well, so they got away with all the money and no one was hurt.
The end.
That sort of thing.
So Richie starts splashing the cash around. Before long, they catch up with Mr. Torino, catches up with him. I think it's Johnny Torino, catches up with him, and basically they get the name of Joey out of him as well. So they try to chase Joey. While this flashback's going on, you do swap back to Tom being in hospital. Obviously, the altercation they had with the mob guys, Mr. Torino and his clan. There was some slight injuries, so he's in hospital and he's telling his family this. So he's very, very open with his wife and his son about who he really is, who he used to be. He says he's Tom, but he used to be Joey. So he's telling him about it. And at the end of chapter two, you see Mr. Torino chasing Joey, and they come to a dead end, as they do classically. There's a barbed wire wire fence in front
of him.
It's
always a fence.
Yeah, it's always a fence. And Joey manages to damage Mr. Trina's eye with the barbed wire fence. And
yeah.
Yeah, and that's how he slices off a finger as well. And this is how Mr. Trino knew that Tom was Joey. Even so many years later, he was certain it was him because of the missing fingers as well.
Yeah.
And also when he saw his son, it was a spitting image of Joey when he was that age.
Oh.
Yeah, so so that's where it ends in chapter two, and Joey gets away, and then he explains that he drifted for a while, and then he ended up getting to this small town, met his wife and settled down, and this is the life he wanted. He had a bit of money left with him, so they set up a business. So he never went back. He had to leave his grandmother, had to leave everybody there. He just didn't know what was going to happen. He just had to leave. In chapter three, it turns out that Mr. Torino wasn't supposed to get him. He wasn't supposed to do it. It was all personal. Mm. And actually the mob boss's son had the real debt to settle with him. They think it's all over because the mob guys have been killed. He thinks, right, okay, well, he's gone, you know, he was after me and he's gone now. And he gets a phone call, and the phone call's from Richie, who he assumed had been captured and killed by the mob.
Oh, right, the guy who the blabbermouth.
Yeah.
The untrustworthy one.
Well, tortured to tell him who he is.
But he wasn't being smart about the money he had. But, okay, so he's still alive.
Yes, it turns out he's still alive, and he's phoning Tom, and Tom doesn't know. He's thinking this is not right. How could it be Richie? But he knows it's Richie. Mm-hmm. So he has to find out. He goes to see Mr. Torino in hospital because he, even though he was shot several times, he still survived in a coma. So he's thinking about going to, sorry, I'm trying to get my train of thought on this part.
That's all right, you're doing fine.
No, sorry,
it's complicated.
The reason I got confused, because I thought when you were going looking at the panels, I thought it was Tom going to see Mr. Torino in the hospital to kill him, and actually it's somebody else from the mob group that's gone to kill him, because he shouldn't have, he's gone messed after, up, he shouldn't have gone after him, shouldn't have been personal, he should have come back, should have brought Joey back to pay his debt. And he gets another phone call. He's being, basically, he knows that the mob's after him again, so there's no way that anyone can protect him, so he has to go back to New York and tell the story of what happened when he was a kid about blowing up the restaurant and killing off the mob boss and things like that. Anyway, they can get protection from his to tell the story so they can follow up and find out what happens. So they all go to New York, and he gets a phone call from the person who's actually after him, which is the mob's son. I'm trying to remember the mob boss's name. I can't.
Is it Papaluigi?
No, it's not mentioned very much. That's
is it Mario?
Even close.
Is it Princess Peach?
Is it Princess
Is it Bowser?
That's it. No, it's Marshmallow Man.
Is it Bob-omb?
Bob-omb.
Is it Mr. Pepperoni?
Oh, how did I forget that?
I don't know. No, is it Mr. Pepperoni?
I can't remember his surname, but it's Big Lou, and his son is Little Lou. So
Big Lou.
Little Lou.
I want to call James Big Lou from now on.
So Little Lou's after him because he killed his father, so he wants to seek revenge, basically. Tom gets a phone call in the middle of the night, and he goes to meet Big Lou, Little Lou. No police there, anything like that. He prepares himself as much as he can for this by putting on a plaster cast and putting some pepper spray in the plaster cast as his only weapon, because he can't take guns or anything with him. And then he goes and meets Little Lou. The one thing I never really understood is how Joey became so amazingly good at Tom became so amazingly good at like fighting and things,
because he started out early by killing up the geezers.
The
hippie probably trained him.
I don't know. In the film, you can understand why he's so good at being so violent, but in this, it just
he lived on the
street. Books.
He lived on the street.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's it must be an act of survival. Anyway, he
was a drifter.
He sneaks in and he finds Richie. And Richie has been held, this is 20 years, he's been held and tortured for 20 years. So he knows Richie's...
Bloody blimey.
Yeah. He knows... Wait until I show you what I'm going to show you. He's...
This I'm not is sure why, what's
yeah,
happening.
Exactly. This is why I vaguely remember the rest of the book before that, because after seeing these couple of
panels...
You're
literally going to show us them.
I am literally going to show you some panels.
Is it right at the end? Should you... Don't tell us too much about it, and we'll just react to it.
Okay, so he knows that Richie's in the building. He needs to get Little Lou before Little Lou gets to his family and kills them off. He has to get through Little Lou's boys first, so he's having... There's a fighting scene where they're shooting down. He gets through the boys, and then he finds Richie. And
I was a little bit sick in my mouth. Oh,
you were not. This is like two girls, one cup.
Oh no! Oh my god, that was yeah.
Oh, no. What are you showing me? Oh, I'm horrified.
Oh my goodness.
So
I've seen worse than that.
Yeah, I haven't. Oh, actually, I wouldn't like to be in that state though.
But it's pretty horrific. Okay, fair enough. It reminded me of Seven with the Sloth as the...
Any one of the bodies in that are pretty gross in Seven.
Exactly. The one where he actually literally starves him to the point
of death. So, just to clarify, we have been very careful not to tell you what happens, what we have just seen, but it's like something in Seven.
Or the Metallica Video 1.
What's the Video 1?
I haven't seen
Which that. One's that? That's not the one where the guy's running away from a truck. In his dreams.
The guy in the video for One ain't running nowhere, no.
Does he not have any legs?
Jesus Christ. Did you look at the same picture I looked at?
Yeah, but I don't know what... I haven't seen the Metallica video. What's the one where there's the man running away from a truck?
I don't know.
That's horrible, Jane.
It is horrible. I'm going to leave it there now, actually, because I realise I'm spoiling the absolute bejesus out of this book.
It was, it's okay, nobody's going to be able to get a hold of it anyway.
I'll leave it there...
The art's beautiful. Vince Locke's art's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, it's funny how Matt Dwyer's from the Weekly Crisis was sort of mentioning this to me. He'd read it a long time ago, but hadn't got on with his art. Was thinking about going back and reading it. I think if you're new to this sort of, if it's not something you're used to, I think also maybe with age, it's very raw. But then it
how
goes.
How old is Matt?
I don't know. Older than me. Isn't everyone older than me?
I don't know.
I wouldn't know.
Matt.
It's
Matt.
Difficult to tell from his voice. Matt, how
dude,
old are you?
How old are you, dude?
Yeah, can you tell
He's up to date now. He might actually
but
hear this in the next
month. But even if he's the
same
age as me, I'm not saying you're old. I'm not suggesting you're old, Matt.
She's saying
at
you're
all.
Old, Matt.
I'm not.
But men are allowed to get older.
I don't know where we're going with this. This is really weirding me out.
It is.
Good.
Anyway, he was saying about he didn't get on the artwork, and I was thinking about it. It's like, actually, yeah, it's very raw, rough sketching. It's excellent for the story. It's just really, really gritty and goes so well with it, and the expressions and the gory scenes. I mean, there's quite a few in here of the shootings and obviously the end scene you see, and well, some of the end scenes you see are all drawn so spectacularly, in the sense that you can tell it's really horrible and horrific, and there's no colour in it. A bit Tarantino, almost, yeah. Where it's black and white, there's no colour, but it's drawn in such a way that it's still really quite... You know, that's bits of brains that's been splattered everywhere, and it's quite obvious that it is. So.
Raw, rough and sketchy.
Yeah, some of the scenes in the city reminded me... It was Eddie Campbell, wasn't it?
Mm,
he's working from hell.
Yes.
It's very sort of... very sort of quite... I don't know, realistic and classic
yeah. It adds a sort of edgy sort of frenetic quality to the story, doesn't it? It's sort of, I think if you're telling a horror story, something with a lot of tension in it, that kind of sort of frenetic pencil work works really well. Makes you feel uneasy, doesn't it?
But raw, rough and sketchy describes some of my relationships that I've been in.
And your general appearance.
That's also true.
Yes
that is very true.
War. What is it good for? Maintaining the idea that violence is a solution for problems, and therefore maintaining the patriarchy and also the patricianry of a modern political system. Yeah, right on, kids. Well, it's also very good for comics, as I think I discussed last week. Now I'm flipping back to War Stories Volume 1, which is the first trade of Garth Ennis' War Stories. I did his most recent Battlefields, which is with Dynamite, previously. This is a Vertigo book, but be that as it may, it It's quite similar, self-contained war stories with a variety of artists on duty. Turning to each story in turn, the first one we have is dealing with a panzer crew on the Russian front, or more for their concerns, in Johannstiger at the fall of Germany facing the Russians, and their efforts to survive and find a position to surrender to the Americans. Now, it's a very good story about the experience on the Russian front. A creative decision was made about the unit which they serve with, which I think was a brave and right decision to do. I was going to say from my memory that the artwork, which is by Gary Erskine, and I like his work on Dander, for instance, very much, as well as Chris Weston, was a little static, but having looked back through the book, I don't think that's fair. There's a certain cleanness to the draftsmanship, which is lovely in viewing the equipment. Maybe it's just a lack of grit or thread there that made me have that criticism in my mind's eye. It's just a little bit of an odd one now, because looking at it now, it is beautiful. And the tank battles and the scenes in flashback are very well rendered indeed. Maybe I just need to have a word with myself. It will not be the first time, it will not be the last. Now, the next story, which deals with a Northern Irish unit in Italy and is called D-Day Dodgers, is the one that I got in paper. I don't often buy floppies, with art by John Higgins. Great Merseysider, great tradition of art, wonderful work in 2000 AD of late, and Judge Dredd, and actually studied art just down the road from where I'm recording. Now, be that as it may, his art is gorgeous and gritty and flavoursome, and you just feel the heat of the Italian hills during the day and the coldness at night, the cynicism of the troops there. And maybe I have a certain appeal to this because it's a Northern Irish unit, and you know, being from Merseyside, the relationships between different kinds of Irishmen and Irishmen in England, Englishmen, are never really far from one's mind. I don't know. But it flows together and it tells a valuable story, again, that is undertold, often with the flamboyance of D-Day or the Pacific War. Italy is often forgotten, and the actual sacrifices there are forgotten. And it's gorgeous. Have I mentioned that before? Right, moving on. We have our next story, which is by Dave Gibbons doing the art, and it's called Screaming Eagles, and it's about the 101st, and it's a story about the end of war, and it's a story about the inhumanity of the military system. But you know what, it's quite a common story, it's quite a conservative story, it's beautifully drawn, and there's some nice moments of comedy in it, and there's also some nice poignant chapter breaks almost that remind you of how what it's taken to get there. But it's a bit catch 22, it's a bit Band of Brothers, and I think because of those associations, it's the weakest one in the book. Now we come to Nightingale. Nightingale is a story with David Lloyd on art duties, and it's about, I think it's a destroyer, it could possibly be a corvette, on convoy duty. Long and the short of it, there is no better place to see David Lloyd's artwork, and I include V for Vendetta in that. It is exemplary. The shade and the colouring on it goes from evoking the very starkness of Atlantic and Arctic convoy duty, and then brings you into the sunshine of the Mediterranean. But it is exemplary, and it's one of his stories that the ending and the start are very closely connected. It's just amazing. And if D-Day Dodgers hadn't got me into Garth Ennis writing war comics, if that had been the one I picked up the shelf, there'd be no question I would have been buying them as floppies from day one. So anyway, that ceases my wittering on Garth Ennis's War Stories Volume 1. I will be, if the kind people at Moab will have me, giving a summary of War Stories Volume 2 at some point in the future. Thank you very much for listening. This is Kiar from Dissecting Worlds on the Geek Syndicate Network, signing off.
I'm so sorry I talked so crappily about that.
You didn't?
I feel like I did.
And now for the self-deprecation.
Yeah. Well,
that was lovely,
Nick's
thank you.
Like, last...
Who's Joey?
You can't always measure yourself against me. I'm awesome.
I'm not sure if we cleared that up to my satisfaction.
What?
Who Joey was?
Joey was...
It wasn't Joey from Friends,
no,
was it?
No, it wasn't Joey from Friends. It was Joey, who Tom McKenna used to be in A History of Violence.
Joey Lawrence. He's friends with Melissa Joan Hart.
You are full of... friends with Melissa Joan Hart. Poop, man.
No, I'm pretty sure...
No, you totally Joey are. Is. You totally are, though.
You hate me.
A little bit.
Oh, that was a loud creak, wasn't it?
Loads. Right, thank you for that, Jane. That was great.
Okay. Oh, I remember the other thing I was going to tell that I did in my week. You just reminded me. Oh. I had to explain to somebody what Two Girls, One Cup was.
Oh, God, it's hard. Do you know, I think I've actually seen it, but
Jane,
then blocked
Jane,
it out.
Jane, look at the running order, right? Because we have a running order.
I know, we should
Our week was over an hour and a quarter ago, Jane. You've missed the boat.
You're such a bumhead.
Sorry.
You should have remembered it, made a note, pretended next week when we said what we did with our weeks... Pretended that it was the week coming
that you had
told someone
it.
About One Girl, One
I expect
Cup.
To two have girls, to explain. I expect to have to explain Two Girls, One Cup to someone.
One Girl, One Cup is a totally different. That's a perfectly charming tale of
a girl
who
goes
drinking
to Starbucks,
a cup of tea.
Gets a cup of tea.
Tea. Cup.
We just stomped over the one same
cup
thing.
Tea. Should we go now, do you think?
We need to. What are you guys doing this week? Jane's coming over here tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So that'd be nice.
I'm going to watch the Comedy Awards with my baby.
Hopefully no one will make any untoward jokes during that one.
I quite enjoy the Comedy Awards. I like the air of enmity and tension that you can feel coming through your TV screen.
That's all awards shows, isn't it, ever?
I feel it's just more so at the Comedy Awards. They just feel nastier.
They want to make snippy jokes about each other because that's what they do,
that's
but
true.
They don't.
Yeah.
The dogs have stopped barking. I think they might have eaten each other.
The drums, they've stopped.
I think we're doing stuff because my wife's birthday is coming up, and so I think we are maybe going away at the weekend to visit her family, which would be nice.
Lovely.
Because they have the baby. We're seeing lots of them. It's very sweet. Your baby's still very good as well, though. But she's just down the road.
I think you'll find my baby's the best one of all.
Well, yes. She certainly is the best one of all.
I get the impression, though, that that's a relatively subjective opinion.
Yes.
I think you're biased.
Speaking as...
Your friend?
Speaking as her parent.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to do that?
What?
Speak as her parent.
Yes. You are her parent. Yeah. She can't do anything about that
you
now,
have
James.
To. You're going to have to speak and embarrass her when she's a teenager.
Well, speaking as a parent, thank you very much for listening this week.
Yeah.
Thank
you to all the contributions, contributors.
Yes, thank you, Max.
Just go through Max. Thank you for talking about whatever it is you talk about because we haven't listened to it. George, thank you for talking about Red Robin. I wouldn't say you do a better job of it than James does, but... frankly, you know. David, you need to calm down. But otherwise, thank you for yelling at us. Oh, and I can't remember. What's his secret identity?
Kiha,
thank you for talking to us about Garth Ennis' War Comics.
Thank you, Dave.
You're thank all. You.
Anonymity protected.
Yes.
If we forget to say thank you at the end of these sometimes, it's not that we hate you, it's just that...
We don't always get them in time.
No, we don't. We don't. No. We never know what's going to happen.
We're taking a punt on Max.
We are.
At this point,
Max hasn't delivered his email to us. We might have got to the point now and said, oh, thank you, Max, and listener will be sat and go, Max wasn't on this week.
Yeah.
This is all
Max
crazy.
Didn't do nothing or nothing.
Oh, two-bit piece
what?
Of...
What two cups, one girl sort of cockamamie show is this?
Normally so professional and organised. They have sold us out. I want my money back.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thank
You're all
you.
Terrific.
Bye-bye.
Every generation gets fooled again. And every generation... it's the same, and it's no good saying it's not in your name. 'Cause it is in your name, and this generation is to blame. And this generation is the same, and I'm sorry that I can't join in anymore. But I've been let down too many times before. Oh yeah, we mean it. We hate the kids.
No, don't go home and fucking cry now.
I'm in bad mood.
Right. Have you adjusted this at all?
A little bit.
How's the trim? Was the trim in the right
place? No, it was too low. You need to stop turning it down to record. You turned it down when you did your little secret podcast.
No.
That's called a nightmare, mate.
Oh, thanks. Tonight in the pod, we talk around our spinning orders, enjoy some marvellous contributions, take it. Oh, what's wrong?
That's, I got a bit of that, that's disgusting. Look, yeah, look. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's changed.
Yeah.
Until very recently.
Oh, right.
Until very recently. The thing I said was actually true, but now the thing I'm selling you is no longer true because of changes.
Changes.
George Beedham.
Wah! Wah!
Scouse Drawther.
Rah! Rah!
Where were you then?
Oh, I bailed on you.
Why would you
I
do
forgot
that?
I'd finished doing my bit. George Beedham,
wah, wah,
Scouse Drawther,
wah, wah.
She took the bail on us.
Leave that bit on. That's like the end of Smoking a Bandit.
You bum up and down. What's happened?
I was what? Dancing. I was enjoying it.
Are you going to bail every time you try and do it?
As long as James doesn't bounce, I'll be alright.
Okay, oh, once more then for Jane.
Good feeling.
Hang on.
My poor throat. It's David Wynn. He's very cross.
I see why you were laughing now. I didn't...
It's what he does when he's doing it. It's just like, oh, I feel the energy. Of
I was getting song. Maiden, though, wasn't I? I was getting very maiden. I'm hot.
I'm
this is taking
warm.
A lot out of me. If I have a heart attack...